Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Boothcast. Before I throw you over to my interview with seven-time Futuregrain Ironman champion, Darren Mercer, I wanted to just give you guys a bit of a heads up. Next Wednesday at 7 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, I'll be going live with Dean Gardner from Ocean Paddler and major sponsor of the Australian Ocean Racing Series, Shore & Partners, with Earl Evans. We'll be going live together. And we'll be talking all things Australian Ocean Racing Series for 2021. And you can get on, ask any questions you like, and we'll be there to answer them. So just a reminder, 7 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time next Wednesday, going live, Dean Gardner, Earl Evans. It'd be great to talk to all of you guys about what's coming up this summer. Now I'm going to throw you over to my interview with Darren Mercer. Hello and welcome to Boothcast. On Boothcast, I speak to people about sport, business, and the winning mindset. Today on Boothcast, I have a 7-time Futuregrain Ironman Series champion, a 2-time Australian Ironman champion. He's won the Coolangatta Gold. He's a legend of Ironman and surf life saving, and I'm very lucky to have him on. So, Darren Mercer, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Michael. Good to be on.
Yeah, so can you give us a little bit of a snapshot of your life? So basically, where you're from, what do you do, and how did it all start for you?
Well, I grew up on the south coast of New South Wales, a town called Thirroul, which is just north of Wollongong, and grew up there with my younger brother and sister and mum and dad. We were sort of not far from the beach, so it was always down to the beach when we were young kids, even at Austie Pools and the Rocks and that sort of thing with mum. And so it was always that coastal lifestyle. And then we got involved in nippers at a young age. I was 5 years old. And then it just continued from there. But, we had a pretty good lifestyle, as I said, when we were young kids. But that beach was a main focus. Dad used to play a bit of football, but he was a member of the surf club. And that was a big focus for us as a family.
And as a kid, were you just doing surf life saving? You say you joined surf club around 5 years old. You were basically straight into it. But were you doing other sports growing up?
Yeah, well, I did. I played soccer for Thirroul outside of school, and then your normal school sports, obviously, a lot of cross country running and that sort of thing. And at that stage too, we're sort of just active. When we're on skateboards and up the bush on our push bikes and building cubby houses and that sort of thing just under the escarpment at Thirroul there. And it was just a really good way to sort of be brought up and hang out with your mates. And we sort of had a group of guys there where we sort of were training with as we got a bit older, but also that we used to knock around as young guys with and just have all that the fun that you normally have as a young guy growing up.
And when you were growing up, was surf life saving something you did competitively, like straight away, or was it something that you were just learning your skills, you're going down having fun with your friends, and then the competitions came? Like, what was the landscape of, say, surf life saving back in the 70s and 80s when you were probably
Yes, 70s, geez, that's when it was. Look, we joined purely because we were living on the coast, as I said, and we just wanted to be able to be safe in the water and be able to handle ourselves in the surf. And that's how it all kicked off. And it was never any intention to go in there with, that you're going to be an Ironman champion. Back in those days, it was non-existent. And, from a young age, we were obviously competitive, like two brothers, and you'd know exactly the same. It doesn't matter what you're doing. It's a bit of a competition, whether it's trying to get to the dinner table first or who's going to get to the car first to get the best seat. But, it was just a progression as we went through. Obviously, through the Nipper era, I was sort of okay. I was never a great swimmer. Board paddling was my favourite, and I think I lost count how many times I used to tell Dad that I don't need to swim. I don't need to swim. I just want to do board paddling. And we surfed as well, and that was a big part of our life growing up. Dad's two younger brothers, Jeffrey and Joel, used to make surfboards in my grandmother's garage at Nan's place. So there was just stuff strewn everywhere there it's from as long as I can remember. But and they used to make some boards, and obviously Dean and I would get the hand-me-downs from them. Yeah. And that was they were our first surfboards. But it was just something that we did as well as everything else with the nippers and things. But then come into that cadet era, I was starting to sort of, more competitions were around, and we never really traveled a lot. We didn't get that opportunity that kids do these days where, you know, you're competing in a state. For us to compete outside our state, you either had to be picking an interstate team or, you know, there was a championship outside of Sydney. But a lot of those earlier days, for me, the only time we got to travel was when the Australian championships were on. And my first Aussies was down in Tasmania, down at Clifton in Tassie. And it was pretty cold, obviously. I thought I was used to the cold coming from Wollongong, but, you know, cold down in Tassie, it's a different cold. But apart from that, everything was domestic. You know, you were sort of in your state, regional, like the Illawarra branch was where we did a lot of our comps. Now, for us in those days, traveling to freshwater, to the freshwater carnival was a big journey. But obviously that's changed now and there's so much more that the kids can do. But yeah, it was probably got through those cadet years and then into the you know, juniors, where I was starting to sort of show a bit of form. And then obviously you know, Leachie had won the two Coolangatta golds and it was all starting to get rolling from there.
And when you went to your first Aussies, I think it must have been like 76 or something like that, when you went down to Clifton. I'm just looking at the places where the results were in Australian titles. So that must have been around about when your first Aussies was. How old were you when you went to your first Australian titles? Would that have been 16s?
Yeah, cadets. So I was sort of cadets in those days, was pretty much you're under 15s. And yeah, that was a pretty of an experience. I was in Ostermere Surf Club at that stage. I did all my nippers at Thirroul. And then when it came to going into the seniors, which was cadets then, just used to have cadets, juniors and seniors. There was only three age divisions. A lot of my mates and I was surfing at Ostermere all the time. So I joined Austin Surf Club, did my bronze with Ostermere and competed right through until my junior years finished and then went into open, came back to Thirroul. But I was the only non-boat member of Ostermere Surf Club. So the craft, all it did was just threw my board on the back of the boat and then it got driven down to Tassie. And I still remember now we stayed out the back of the surf club down there, which I know is just now housing estate. Just used to be paddocks, cow paddocks, you know, open fields. And we were in camper vans. And I just don't think I slept a wink because the boaties were threatening to do all sorts of things to me the whole weekend that we're away. But yeah, that was a great memory and, you know, something that, you know, but obviously I think everyone remembers their first Aussies and then it gets a bit of a blur in between there.
So growing up with your brother Dean, what was that like as athletes and brothers and going surfing and training together and racing together and doing all those different events that you did together? Were you really pushing each other? Like, I know my brothers and I would just compete every single time we got to, like, Greg had a Wednesday morning, my father, Wednesday morning running session. Me and my brother would just race against each other every Wednesday morning. And when we went to the swimming pool, it'd be like, who could do the fastest 200 free or whatever it was. And then my brother beat me one time and pretty much brought me to tears. But what was it like? Yeah. What was it like growing up with Dean and sort of competing against your brother constantly?
Yeah, look, it was... it was an experience, I can tell you. You know, he was one of those guys who was probably a little bit more driven than I was, and had to work hard for all his achievements. But he would push me all the time, and you've got it spot on. I mean, you've done it before. You've got your brothers, and it's just a constant battle. And I know, being the older brother, I sort of had the wood on him for quite a few years because I was just a little bit older, a bit stronger, obviously, and you know, we used to do some pretty amazing things. And mum and dad have been a huge part of that, where we were driving from Wollongong to Carr's Park in Sydney to train with Dick Kane as young kids. You know, dad would get us up in the morning and carry us down to the car in the back of the Kingswood station wagon. And we had the mattress laid out in the back and away we'd go. And we did that for years until we sort of settled down a little bit more. And there was more opportunities down in Wollongong for coaching. But yeah, Dean was... Yeah, he's one of those guys that you just hated to race because you knew no matter what was happening, you know, you'd get on the start line or even training, it was going to be a battle from the start.
Yeah, it just is something about having brothers and being competitive and being in sport that really helps you drive and push you to the next level. And I'm sure it did for you as well. But when did you start to see success as a junior and then a cadet? Like, when was the first time you went, right, like, this is the time that I'm going to actually take it to the next level? Like, you started at Thirroul, you went to Ostermere, you were the only guy really competing in the surf. When did you go, okay, maybe I can start to win events and race and like maybe take it to the next level and become a professional in some way?
Yeah, well, and you say a professional, it wasn't ever really done then. Obviously, Leachy sort of paved the way for that to start with the longer distance racing, and the Coolangatta Gold was a perfect example of that. But I guess, as I said, I was at Ostermere Surf Club. I'd finished in year 10. I got an apprenticeship as an electrical. I got an electrical apprenticeship at Mossvale. So it was with the coal mines, and Dad worked in the coal mine all his life. So I was pretty lucky enough, pretty fortunate to get that position. But it meant living out of home all through the week. So Monday morning or even Sunday afternoon, we'd get driven over to Mossvale, which is probably about an hour 15 drive. And we stay there all week, and then we come home on Friday afternoon. And we're living in a pub, and you can just sort of read between the lines there as a young guy living in a pub doing this apprenticeship, making a huge wage of probably about $125 a week.
Yeah,
it sort of didn't last long. But that was when I guess I made a decision to come home early. I didn't finish that apprenticeship. I did 2 years and then came back. I probably look back now and think that I wish I did, but you know, if I had have done that, I probably wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now. So that was probably the turning point. But when I did come back, Dad just said to me, you know, you're not coming back just to sit on your bum and do nothing. And I used to hang out at Ostermere Beach through the day. There was two lifeguards there that sort of took me under their wing, and we used to train all day. And they were into fitness, so we'd get there. And before I could go to the beach, Mum made sure they had to vacuum the kitchen floor and clean up and put all the clothes online, then I could go and do what I had to do. So it wasn't really that hard to do, but it was something that I had to get done before I could go and have a bit of fun. And out there we just on the old rescue boards, there was no sort of airs or grace. It was just, this is the course. And at Ostermere, if you're not familiar with it, it's only a small beach, so we got rocks either side and a pool where we'd set up the course and away we'd go. And sometimes the missions would take, you know, half an hour, 40 minutes, where we're just going round and round and round. And that's where I sort of got a taste for it and really liked doing it. And then that opportunity came up, that first Ironman event that they put on at Bondi, which was sponsored by Foster's. And I thought, you know, I'm going to have a crack at this. And I'd done a bit of ski paddling, obviously. And then it was, I was sort of a bit green, but I was pretty confident that I could do okay. I wasn't strong and everything, but I was just good at sort of long distance events. And it turned out that I got up there and I was only 16. I was still 16, just turning 17 when it all happened, and found myself in the lead with Leachy closely following on my heels. And at that stage, we had to run on the promenade at Bondi, and I distinctly remember we were following the camera van, and it went down onto the beach, and of course I went down onto the beach following it, and I was meant to go to the end of the promenade and then hit the beach. So as I've done that, made that mistake, Leachy's just kept running along the top, and that was pretty much it. I probably could have, looking back now, probably could have chased him and caught him, and I've seen the footage 100 times over. But at that point, I was young, I was inexperienced, and I looked and went, you know, I just dropped my bundle, but my whole world had collapsed, and I thought, here we go. I just couldn't do it, and I just dragged my bottom lip the whole the way back down to the other end of the finish line. And at least she ended up winning and I came second. But that was this spark, that little flame. And you know, I knew that that's what I wanted to do.
So what year was that? And what year were you born? So I can start getting a little bit more context of...
Ooh. 67. You're born like... I was born 67. In 67. Yeah. Yeah. And okay. I think that... I'm pretty sure that was like 85 that would have happened.
Okay, so you must have gone to Clifton 83, because I was thinking, I was like, 76 is too early.
Yeah,
you're only probably 10 or something.
Yeah, I'm not that bad, am I? I don't know. Grace.
You never really know people's age these days. Sometimes they're like much younger than you think or much older than you think. They're just somebody's. I guess you were just Jordan's dad originally for me, and then all of a sudden, I became friends, and it just all turns around and changes. But yeah, it is really funny. You're talking about that Foster's event, and you're saying how like you're young and you're green and you make those mistakes because you think it's a be all and end all, and you're like, you just crumble. Like I remember when I used to crumble in races, I was like, now I look back and just go, what was I doing? Like I didn't even try for the last 30% of the race.
It was exactly like I'd paced myself perfectly. I did everything I wanted to do, and I knew that, you know, I was lucky enough, I could run quite well. Dad used to do a lot of long distance runs, fun runs and that sort of thing, like the City to Surf and, you know, Sullender Surf was a big one we used to do, but we used to try and do as many as we could around the, you know, up and down the coast and around those areas. But I knew once I got onto the promenade and we had to throw our shoes on, obviously, I knew that I could sort of match it with Leachie and hold him off, because I did have not a bad gap on him. But yeah, it's so funny looking back on it now. I know that I probably could have had a crack at him, but I just didn't. Yeah. And I'm like, what were you doing? Why didn't you do it? But you just don't. And it's just experience. And I guess, you know, you've spoken to a lot of guys, and I know that everyone says the same thing. You know, you can't coach experience. You just got to get in there and do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's nothing like racing for your best training, really, that you've got to be able to get out there and just practice those race skills, because you just don't do it. Like, you think you're hurting yourself in training, and then you get to a race and you realize that you weren't even trying, sort of thing. You hadn't even got there. So these are lessons we need to learn as we go along.
Exactly. I mean, there's no, and my dad and all my coaches over the years, I've been fortunate enough to have some great coaches. And back in those days, some of them just, you know, they were doing it for nothing. They weren't getting paid. They were just doing it because they enjoyed it, and they had that satisfaction of, if I did well or Dean did well, that, you know, they had a, that was their reward. And we used to do some pretty crazy stuff down in Wollongong, like down in that area where we grew up. We were lucky enough to be able to run up in the escarpment, up through the bush. So we weren't out on the main roads and, you know, in the town centre and that sort of thing. It was just a really good way, and a good old school way to train. And I know when we started to get the skis more involved, because I was only young when we started on the skis, I never had a ski. You know, that was like, the kids these days don't understand that we had a ski that Dean and I used to share. So you can imagine Dean and I sharing a ski, and we bought it off Tank Bennett. It was one of Tank Bennett's old Hayden skis, and it used to fit Dean all right, but there was no one in the world I could paddle. My knees were in my mouth, you know. It was just crazy. But
I'm sure that ski would have fit me, but I might have needed a little bit shorter.
Yeah. actually, perfect in
Dean's. No, I wouldn't. I've actually tried one of Dean's skis when I was back at Northcliffe. Like, my ski must have been damaged or something. I couldn't reach the pedals. That's how short my legs are.
They're short. But there was guys from other clubs that we used to train together with. There wasn't just the rule training together. There was Bulleye, there was North Wollongong, and Les Miller, who was in Bulleye Surf Club, was a little bit older than me. He took me under his wing for ski paddling, and then later on, Greg Patel from North Wollongong. So we'd all rock up there, and there was guys like Todd Ballin and Jonathan Crowe and my brother and a few others all training at one venue, and we're all in different clubs. It was just crazy. And it's, you know, it's a shame that it's not like that these days, but it is what it is. And, you know, we used to do some pretty mental sessions, actually, and just so primitive. No drinks, no water, no gels, no nothing. You know, we do a Five Islands paddle from North Wollongong out around all the Five Islands, which is out of Port Kembla, and back with no drink, no fluids, no nothing.
And your dickies, I'm sure, as well, with the oil all over you to get better tan.
that was Todd Ballin. That was Scats. He'd love that. But yeah. Well, there was no, you know, there was no fluoro vest. There was lucky if you put a hat on, that was about all you sort of throw on. But it was good times, and very fortunate to have that. You know, we were training our swim group once I came back and based ourselves sort of swim training in Wollongong. We had Rick McKeon as our coach, and then his son Ron would come up from the institute after he was coaching down there. And then it sort of progressed to the point where Ron finished at the uni, AIS, and came up and trained with Rick. But we knew on a Saturday morning, if Ron was in town from Canberra, we were in for a bit of a hell set. But you know, it all just worked really well. And like I said, you know, we'd run with different groups, and we'd be paddling skis with different groups, and board paddling with a different group. It was just really refreshing. And you just sort of, you know, you were different guys. Some would overlap, but most of the time you were different guys each time, and or different crew each time. You know, one of the sessions that Greg Fattel, who took on he was at North Wollongong, he won a state ski championship. I think it was at North Curl once. And that's his claim to fame. But he was a lifeguard, but a really good guy, and helped us and mentored us a lot as well. We paddled from North Wollongong down to Wingdang, up into Lake Illawarra to the yacht club. And his wife was there, picked up our skis, and then we ran back to Wollongong, to North Wollongong Surf Club, just with, I remember I bought a wagon wheel at the shops on the way through Warrawong, and it was the worst thing I possibly could do. You try and run when you're puffed and tired and chew on a wagon wheel and you just got crumbs, and it wasn't.
How far is that for the ski pal and the run?
I think it was, the ski paddle would have been, it would have been like 25K ski and about a 15K run, roughly, by the time we finished it all. So, yeah, and then that was the thing. You know, I'd go home after that. I was just cooked, and you wouldn't move for the rest of the day. But, yeah, we used to do some pretty wild things. A couple of times, or one time, we actually, Greg Fittell was talking about Herbie and Noel Yates, who were training for the Pie Ski Marathon, wanted to do a long paddle one day, and Dean and I said, oh, we'll tag along. So we just tagged along. We paddled from Thirroul all the way up to Port Hacking, up to the Grace Point where the kayak club was. We were supposed to race that day, and by the time we got there, there was no way in the world that any of us could have done any of the race. But we got there, Dad was there, picked us up, and we came home. But yeah, we just did some wild stuff that you wouldn't do today without a massive big support crew. We had no one from the time we left Thirroul until we got to the Grace Point up in Port Hacking. I think Dean got chased by, not chased, but Dean got followed. He got dropped. That was one of the times I could keep in front of Dean. He got dropped from the ski. Obviously, the two older guys were in front of me, and then myself, and then Dean behind. And he got trailed by a shark from about Bundina to the mouth of the Hacking, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy what you guys used to do. I remember like seeing even like initial images of like Molokai's back in the 80s and 90s, and obviously the Ironman, everyone just ran around in their dickies and didn't take water, didn't have any nutrition, didn't really have a training plan, a support team, nothing. It was just like just a bunch of hard blokes going out there and doing a lot of kilometers. But you sort of see like now, like we'll segue, keep segueing because why not? We're talking like training basically. What was training like in the 80s? Like, what were you really doing to really make yourself better? Or was it just more is more? Were you just going out and doing more sessions? Or was it structured in any way? Like, there wasn't a lot of sports science. Like, I've spoken to, like, guys like Leachy at the time, and they were just doing more. Like, everything was just go out and do more than everybody else, and you'll be better than them. And now it's more about, like, quality over quantity and all that. And then you've got all those different sciences that go into it. But what was training like in that period?
Yeah, well, you're spot on. It was like that. It was sort of a... I guess we were sort of experimental in the way that we did everything. We did have a good structure. I know Dad, you know, he guided us pretty well with our training. And obviously Dad was a bit of a more. And Dean loved that. He just thought, yeah, all right, what are we going to do? Let's do more. Whereas I would probably wasn't, I'd do it, but I could sort of judge my pace a little bit more than what Dean would. As long as Dean had his nose in front by about an inch, he was happy. Yeah. So you could sort of push it to that limit and then know that if you couldn't do any more and you didn't want him to go any harder, you just didn't put the nose in front, because as soon as you put the nose in front, he'd take off. But we knew we had a structure there. You know, we were swimming in the morning. That was our base. Obviously, through the middle of the morning, we'd try and do either a ski or a board or a run. And then we'd rest in the afternoon after lunch, and then we'd do a session in the afternoon. Sometimes we were doing four sessions a day, but it would generally on average work out to be, we're doing three sessions a day. And then Saturday was a big one where, as I said, some of those paddles that we used to do, we used to sort of cram all them together. For a lot of the years there where we were traveling to Audley and going into Grace Point, just to be a part of the kayak group to do races on the Saturday. So we'd still swim in the morning with Ron down at the pool at Unanderra. And I don't know if you've spoken to many of the guys, but I know Ali would have trained there, and like, you know, Reece Dewey, Josh Minogue, all those guys, Wes Berg, they've all trained there, Clado. And it's just freezing. It doesn't matter what it is. It's cold there. There was no heating at all. But and then that Saturday I'd either go surfing. So I'd swim, surf, and then we'd go to Lillipilli in the afternoon. But for a while there was three of us that used to ride up from home and then race. And then Dad would pick us up and come home. So Dean and myself had ride from Thirroul, and we'd pick up Brian Morton, who was a great paddler and a good friend of ours. He lived at Stanwell Park. So we'd pick up Morto at Stanwell Park, and we'd ride up to Grace Point, strip off, get on our gear, and then paddle, and then come home. So we did some pretty wild stuff. But, you know, it was structured, I guess, to a certain point, but nowhere near what the guys are doing now. The science wasn't there, and I guess we were sort of crash dummies really as to what you could and couldn't do. And sometimes we probably did cook it a little bit much, but you know, that was, we didn't know any different, and it didn't, you know, everyone was doing the same, everyone was in the same boat.
Yeah, absolutely. It must have been such you were just been going out and having fun, just smashing yourself and coming home from sessions and just feeling wrecked each and every time. And that's what, if you felt wrecked, that would have been a good solution and a good measure of how good the session was in the end.
Yeah, that was it. That was a perfect measure. That was a good one, because you just couldn't, you know, you couldn't even eat dinner. And we were lucky enough, and that's, I guess, every sportsman, sportswoman have that back up there. And mum and dad. And, you know, my sister, you know, she put up with a fair bit of stuff, a bit of favouritism towards Dean and I guess, you know, there was just, as she was coming through and, you know, she was just equally as good as what we were, but obviously a little bit before the Surf Life Saving really embraced the women in the sport, and she sort of took another tangent and went into surfing. So she did surfboard riding and she followed the tour for 2 years on the World Circuit surfing, and it was just before it sort of hit that pro era with the girls as well. But you know, mum and dad were just, dad would be working full time in the pit, mum was working at the pharmacy, and in between all that, they just got us from A to B in the car and back and forth. So we're really lucky in the fact that we could actually train hard, and when we got home, we knew we didn't really have to do, we didn't do anything, you know, it was all just laid out and it was all there. And you know, they're the things that you appreciate later on in life when you've actually got to try and juggle that training and family, which I did probably sort of, you know, towards that tail end of my career.
Yeah, it's awesome to hear of you speak about, I think it was, you said Jindara, the swimming pool, and I remember going to Choles Sound Pool, and Unanderra, and that, yeah, we had Choles Sound Pool. It was like me, Tommy Fraser Holmes, and those guys, yeah, and my brothers, and we go down, every morning you go and look at the board, and it would like have like the temperatures for the 25, which was like heated, and then you had, yeah, the solar heated 50 meter pool, which was never heated.
That never worked.
No, never. It was like 16 degrees or 15 degrees, and like you jump in and you just be like freezing for the first like 500 meters, and then you get used to it. But yeah, that were fond memories, I guess, for me. But yeah, as you speak about your sister, I actually didn't know you had a sister. So she's an older sister who basically was obviously trying to do the IMS stuff. But really, you did. There was no girls categories at that time.
No. So there was myself, Dean, and then Kylie. She was the youngest, but she's. Yeah, she was really good. And everyone used to say to her, and she used to hate it, are you going to be like your brothers? Are you going to be like your brothers? And I think that's why she went, no, I'm just going to do my own thing. And away she went. So, yeah, look, it's, it was a really good little setup, and we were lucky. And like I said, we experimented with the training, and we had a really good crew. We were traveling interstate for the Ironman series once that all kicked off, sort of in that mid-80s through until that early 90s, where Dad would just pack up the car and the Kings would just be loaded up with our skis and boards and straight across the Nullarbor. We'd fly. My uncle would take us to the airport. Uncle Kerry would take us to the airport. My uncle Jeff was the handler for Dean. And it was just a really big family group that we had. And we had an old guy that just used to travel with us. And he was like our masseuse. And we just had it all dialed. It was really good. We were lucky.
So when did you start to really be a... Like, I guess you, when you're growing up, so you, like, you weren't really thinking about being professionals, but then you had the guys like Grant Kenny come through and sort of really gain a lot of exposure for Surf Life Saving. They were just before basically you started racing, I think, and you would have raced against Grant, but it's more more the tail end of his career. What was it like as a youngster and then obviously a cadet, and then you began to start to be able to race? You've got people supporting you in your racing and you're going around. Like, how did you formulate that professional career essentially?
Yeah, well, like I said, the first one that they did was the Coolangatta Golds, and then you know, that sort of forged that Ironman direction where they were doing long distance races. And the first one was the Foster's Ironman at Bondi, and then that same year they did a race probably about 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later over in Adelaide at Glenelg, and I was lucky enough, I won that one. So I actually had learned from that first one at Bondi, 3 weeks later turned up in South Australia and knew what I needed to do to beat Leachy. And we had some really good battles, Leachy and I, through those early eras. And you know, they're fond memories. And I know now when you see each other, you know, something will always come up. And, you know, Leachy's never one to shy away from a few stories that make him look really good.
Yeah, absolutely. He'll always tell you those ones. Leachy, yeah, for listening, we know who you, what you really like. We know what you really like.
We love you, Leachy.
We do love you. But so you're racing Leachy, you're racing GK. When do you win your first New South Wales crown? I know you win a lot of junior crowns as well. So you win your two or three junior titles, and then you win eventually your Open Australian titles. Let's talk a little bit about the Australian titles. What was that like to win your first junior one, and then obviously moving through and actually becoming the Ironman that you became?
They were really good. You know, like I said, the only time I mentioned before that we really got to travel interstate was for the Aussies in those days. And they always just share it around the different state. And the first junior Aussies that I really knew that I had a good chance was down in Point Leo. And it was just, everyone talks about different Aussies at different times, but it was freezing cold. And on the Saturday, when they were doing some of the prelims and the heats and semis and different things. And obviously the Aussies in those days weren't run over 4 or 5 days. They were run over 3 days. And some of the winds and the conditions, that was the year that they canned having cadet skis. That was the year that they dropped it out. And Brian Morton, as I mentioned before too, he was sort of set to do really well in it. And the skis were just getting blown. They'd hit the water and they're just getting blown away. The boats were rolling down the beach because the wind was so strong.
Where's Point Leo?
Down in Victoria.
Okay.
It's down in that area on that
surf coast.
Yeah. Just up on that coast from Portsea, actually. I'm pretty sure it's along that section. And I'll get corrected on that. I'm sure you'll get people saying, he doesn't know where it is.
But, yeah, I wasn't sure.
I've got a rough idea.
South Australia, Victoria, but yeah.
Down in Victoria. And yeah. It was a junior iron, and then come the Sunday, I'd made the final, and there was some really good guys going around at that stage. Obviously, Trev and I went all through our surf career in the same ages, so we jumped into first year juniors in that year. Sean Kenny had won the year before, so he was probably the one that we're all sort of looking at and watching. And the next day was just flat as a tack. There was no waves, just a light little 5-10 knot breeze on the water, and it was just ideal. Sun out, sun shining, and I was lucky enough to win that one. And then that was like, you just got that bug. And then the next year I won again in Moana, South Australia, down in there. Same deal. It was flat with a really sort of strong sort of, well, I don't know what direction it would have been, but it would have been like a southerly on the east coast sort of blowing across the water, and I won that one. That year, actually, Trev finished second and Dean finished third, and they DQ'd Dean because he bumped someone going around one of the turning markers, which in this day and age, you know, you've seen the tussles with Pooley and Shannon, you know, it's like that would have been a love tap compared to what those guys are doing and what we'd done as time went on. But the officials in those days were fairly stringent with everything, and Dean got DQ'd and bumped Todd Borland up into third spot. So it was sort of one of our training partners again there. And then coming to the Opens, in those 2 years, I tried to be the same as Trevor did as well, do the same as Grant, win that Open and Junior. So we'd competed in the Junior and the Open Irons straight after, and no one ever really got close to that double. I know Trevor, obviously, I'd won the Junior, but didn't do that well in the Senior, but still made the final. A couple of the guys who got really close were Jason Mewitt. He won the junior at North Wollongong and got second in the Open at North Wollongong. So he was pretty close. And I think, and I'll probably be corrected, I think Kai might have got second in the junior and won the Open. So he sort of, you know, was the other way around. But yeah, that was sort of for me as a junior coming through. And then we were lucky enough that that's when that Iron Series really kicked off in those next couple of years and spanned sort of 6-7 years of just amazing, you know, opportunities for us as Ironmen and Ironwomen later on.
And we'll come back to this series, but it was a long time until you actually won your Open Australian Ironman titles. You won two in a row in 96 and 97, but we're talking 10 years prior to that you were going around in the juniors. What was that like trying to chase that Australian Ironman title for so many years? Obviously, you had other successes through that period, but it took you so long to finally get it. Like Dean won one before you did.
Yeah, Dean. Dean won the one at Burley when the surf was huge. And, you know, you hear stories about that where Dean and Riddo in the prelims, like in the, could have been the heats or semis. They were running from, if you, it's still there, the drain's still there. We were sort of competing a bit south of that. And to get around the Cairns, they had to, they were running up past that drain to hit the water and then obviously get around the Cairns. And Dean and Leachy got to the Cairn, Dean and Riddo got to the Cairn, and Riddo was one of the best surf swimmers today, still going around. He'd compare with them. You know, he was just a, hang on. Are you there still?
Yeah, all good, mate. Yeah, you must have just got a text through or something.
No, I didn't, but we can cut that, can't we?
So we were talking about, obviously, the Ironman Championships through the cadets that you had, and we're going up towards like 10 years, basically, between your junior victories and then your win in 96. Like, you had even your brother Dean won one before you. What was that like?
Yeah, that was pretty hard to take. But it was a pretty proud moment. You know, it just seemed like it was never going to happen because I had such good success in the juniors, and then coming into the seniors, you know, it was a completely different ball game. Obviously, the guys were a lot stronger and, you know, they're much more honed on the craft. That was sort of something, I could paddle a board and swim all right, but that ski was something that took a while to get used to. But obviously now really love the ski and paddling the ski in the ocean. But it was huge at Burley that year. And, you know, there were some really tough tussles and competitions where guys were in front and just getting pumped and in the iron. And I remember Dean and Craig Riddington, who would be one of the best surf swimmers going around still today, were having to run, and everyone was running up towards the drain there at North Burley, still the same spot where they do the transition for the gold now, to get into the waters to get around the Cairn. And I remember in the heat before mine, Dean and Riddo got to the Cairn and they were literally a metre away from it and they couldn't get around the Cairn. They had to come back in the water, back out, run up the beach even further than the drain to get in and get around. And then after that, they swapped it. So you were swimming in reverse and the other craft were all in reverse. But Trevor had done and dusted that iron at Burley, and I was in third, Dean was in second, and we were just trying to get out, and we finally got out. And I remember the commentator still was saying, Trevor's got this. Trevor's got his another Ironman title. He's going to win it. He's going to win it. And then you just see Dino come through the gutter, over a runner, down to the beach, and then has hit the beach probably, you know, 10 or 15 metres ahead of Trev, and Trev's sprinting, and you know the stature and size, and we've talked about it before.
I watched the video as well.
And Dean got there before Trev by the smallest of margins, and then and I've come across in third. So it was almost a repeat of the juniors where Dean got DQ'd, but that was like the weather and the conditions were just appalling. They had actually had the Jeeps and the four-wheel drives with their lights shining onto the finish line. It was that the light was that dull and sort of overcast. But that was a great memory. And there's a good photo of Dad's got Dean on his shoulders, and I'm sort of next to them, the three of us together after that race. So that was pretty memorable, that one for sure.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to get away with that these days with all the restrictions that you have on Australian titles and obviously not being able to paddle in that type of surf, not having really hectic conditions, and definitely not racing under the lights of Jeeps. That would be a bit of a no-no these days. But having Dean win that first Ironman title, and you probably had the same instance with Trevor winning so many open titles when you were probably matching or beating him most of the time in the juniors. What was it like? And did that fire you up for the next year to go two in a row?
Yeah, it did. You know, it was tough for us because, you know, at that stage, obviously the spotlight's on you, and I always felt comfortable in the longer distance races, but I just couldn't crack that short course race. And I'd done all the training that I needed to do and all the work, but it's just sort of, it just didn't happen. But the year that I won my first one was when... Unfortunately, we had that accident with the surf boats, and Robert Gattenby was hit in the head and passed away. And we were right on the line there, right as that was all happening, ready to go for the final iron. And there was a boat taken there on the spot that we wouldn't race. So they didn't hold the open Ironman. And then for some strange reason, they said, we're going to come back in 2 weeks' time. And we're going to run the open iron final again, which they did. And if you've seen footage of that, we got there and it was just... crystal clear water. It would have been 1 or 2 foot. The wind was offshore and it was just perfect. And it would have been like the total different conditions of what we had 2 weeks before. And that was my first breakthrough victory in the open iron. And then the next year I won. And then the year after that, Dean won. So with three of us, we had 3 years in a row there for a little while. And it was just a great moment for me to sort of get two in a row. But then that was it. A second in WA earlier in the piece, but I just didn't crack that win until then.
So which was what years did you win the Ironman title? Was it
96, 95, 96, and Dean... Oh, no, 96, 97. Dean got 95, sorry.
Yeah,
so
and then...
So we'd won.
And Dean had won in 89 as well.
Yes, yeah. So we got two each. So there's no arguments.
There's no arguments. Yeah, it's all even. It's all even, Stephen. So let's go back to like 86. So you never competed in the Coolangatta Gold or the Gold Coast Gold, I think it was called back then, the two that Leachy's won when it was based around the movie. Did you compete in those ones?
No. We came in after that. That was when we sort of come in after the... And that was, as I said to you before, that was the start of the endurance Ironman racing that kicked off. And that it was that craze sort of through that mid-80s through to the early 90s that was just on the TV all the time and everything else as well.
And then in 86, Nutrigrain and Surf Life Saving come up with this new format, the Ironman series or the Nutrigrain Ironman series, and you win the first one of those. Can you walk us through what was going on and what events you were winning and where were the events taking place? Because for me, it was actually quite hard to find some information on this stuff before we came on.
Yeah, you got to go into the archives to get all that stuff.
Yeah, I gotta go into some big library or something with big books or something to read it, because it's definitely not on the internet.
Yeah. But look, that they had six races in the series. You could drop one of your races. Pretty much started, you know, I'm going to say started in October, and they ran all the way through till January. And the way they ran it, the in those days, instead of the Coolangatta Gold, we had an event called the Manly Gold. So the whole season was run. We'd go to Perth, we'd go to South Australia, we'd go to Victoria, we were in New South Wales and Queensland, and then the final round or the final race was the Manly Gold at Manly. And it was, the crowds were just amazing. You know, the crowds we used to get, I've seen a photo and I think I sent it to Leachy of one of the Manly Golds and the finish area at Manly Beach, and the amount of people there, you just wouldn't think it was an Ironman race. It's just amazing. And we were lucky that we sort of came through that whole era with some, you know, great athletes. And we were pioneers in that era because it had just started. And, you know, we were so lucky to be in that position.
Yeah, it must have been a crazy time. I remember speaking to Leachy the other week and speaking about doing the Coolangatta Gold on the Gold Coast. And it was just like hundreds of thousands of people like along the beaches. Like you never didn't see anybody. Like the finish line was massive. Like there was helicopters everywhere. Like it was just sort of a very different, I guess, picture compared to what probably you have today. But you had all these opportunities and you win that first Ironman series title. What did that mean at that time? Because I guess it's a new concept that's just come about. It's a new professional series. Was it as big as winning an Australian Ironman or something like that to you back in those days?
Yeah, definitely. For me to win the series was huge. You know, it was equivalent to an Aussie title, and not taking any away from an Aussie title. I mean, they're gold. You know, if you get one of those, it's great. And lucky enough, one of my other fond memories of a Aussie medal was when I won a board relay with Dean and Brett Dowker at North Wollongong, and we beat the infamous and the famous Surfers Paradise team. And you know, that was just Craig Sheldon, Dave Orch, and Trev, and that was just that was a huge buzz. And that's one of my fondest memories of surf Aussie medals. But the series, yeah, definitely they're up there and on par with Ironman titles and individual titles at Aussies. You know, there was no doubt about it, because you were competing against the same guys in the same style of competition, and you know, the experiences that we got, and we were, like you said, we were sort of, it was trial and error in those days, different ways that we did things, you know, like helicopters flying over and everything else. Now you've got a drone, you can just pop up with your mobile phone and it shoots out and it'll take a photo, or a GoPro, where we have to have, you know, choppers in the air and IRBs with big cumbersome cameras and things to get any sort of shot out of the whole race. But it was great. But yeah, definitely up there with Aussie titles for the series win.
And you won the first three in a row, but everybody was competing in the Nutrigrain Ironman series at that point. And then there was a split in 89 or 90 for the Uncle Toby Super Series. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. In 89, yeah, 89 it would have been, I think. We'd all competed together for those first 3 years, three and a half, because we did a couple of those individual races that weren't classed as a series. And then obviously we had the Nutrigrain and the Uncle Toby's. And that was the huge, that was a huge moment in the sport where everyone was just fighting for TV rights and, you know, who's got the best competitors, who's, you know, who's better than the other. So it was a real war. And that, and I guess we rode a wave of all that war happening at one time, that we were just going through the motions, and we were just like Johnny on the spot. And we're just so lucky that we're in that era that we got to experience all that. And then obviously that all calmed down. And as you know, today and now it's all back to one, and everyone's competing in together. So it was a pretty testing time, because a lot of good friends, you know, a couple of the guys would stay in the Nutrigrain, which Dean and I did, and that was our decision to do that. And some of the other guys went with the Toby. So it was really difficult. That's when it was just the Aussies was the only time everyone got to race against each other. So, you know, it was a great experience.
Yeah, it must have been fantastic. And having, I guess, competition in within sponsors and TV rights and all that sort of stuff allows athletes to be more professional, because there's more dollar value on the athletes, because the athletes are essentially like a partner in the whole event. It's like, hey, look at like the AFL and that type of thing today. You got the players union, you've got the AFL, and you've got like a whole bunch of different stakeholders. And you were basically part of this big machine that was sort of competing against each other, which allows the athletes to really come to the forefront. So you win those first three Nutrigrain Ironman series. And then it says here Trevor won 89-90. So were people still competing in both?
You either had to make that decision where you went one or the other. And that was a difficult decision for Dean and I to sort of make in those days. Because obviously, you know, I was at the top of that group in the previous 2-3 years. And then I decided not to go. And then everyone else sort of made up their mind what way they were going to go. So yeah, it was really hard. And then Trevor, he won the series in the Nutrigrain, in the Toby's the next year, and I won the Nutrigrain. And we didn't get to do the Coolangatta Gold as such until the 90s, 91, I think it was, first time I got that opportunity to do the gold.
Yeah, so just trying to clear that thing up. So what here it says that Trevor won the Nutrigrain series in 89-90 summer. Is that not correct?
Yeah, that'd be right.
But then he says he also won the 89-90 Uncle Toby Super Series. So, like, was there not as a clear-cut path?
That would have been that sort of cut. So we would, our last season altogether probably would have been 88-89, and then Trev's won the 89-90 with Toby's.
Okay, yeah, I'd be interested to talk to him about it as well, because it's always hard to find out information, secondhand sources, and actually talking to you and actually finding out what really happened.
Some of the dates and years and that, just a bit of a blur, but you know, that happens over time.
it is crazy. Like if somebody asked me what I was doing 20 years ago, how would you know?
you don't, you know, and all the way through, like we would, even when we're competing in the New South Wales State Championship, I think Dean had the record until Smithy got that, probably beat Dean's record. I think they had 5 state titles, and then Smithy came through. I think he might have the most now. But yeah, it's so hard to sort of go back into the archives and through that filing cabinet in your mind of where everything was.
Yeah, when people ask you questions too, like trying to open the doors to try and find out where that information is.
Where you put it.
Yeah, it's in there somewhere, that's for sure. So the split between the Nutrigrain and the Toby's, were Surf Life Saving contracting athletes to Nutrigrain, and then Uncle Toby's as a private organization was contracting athletes to their series as well. Was that how it was working, and that what the split was?
Yeah, pretty much. So obviously Dean and I had an agreement with Kellogg's at that stage, and then all the guys that went the other side had that agreement with Toby's, and Surf Life Saving had that partnership with Kellogg's Nutrigrain. And that's one of the things, I guess, that still today is pretty amazing that it still has that association with Surf Life Saving.
Yeah, well, to have a sponsor that's lasted 30 something years is quite incredible, you know. Yeah. Like, there isn't many.
It's 40 years. Yeah, but it was 40 years they had. That was part of that campaign they just recently ran, where Geordie and TJ are on the back of the pack. So it's been 40 years that Nutri-Grain have had that association with Surf Life Saving.
So they've been running a series in part for about 33 years, but then they obviously had Grant in the early 80s as well as an ambassador for Nutri-Grain, and that was like the Nutri-Grain Ironman thing. I actually watched a video of Grant eating Nutri-Grain as like a 19-year-old or something. It was classic.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So that partnership started there and it's gone through, and then obviously linked up with the Ironman racing through those last sort of 30-odd years.
So in those first 3 years, when everybody was competing against each other, who were your main rivals, like through 86 to 89? Like, was it still the Trevors, the guys, and you were still sort of dominating those series? Was everybody doing it?
Yeah, everyone was all in that era. And there was the main ones there, obviously, was Leachy was the main guy. Craig Reddington, Barry Newman was up there. He was one of the other guys that did really well in those events. Dean. And then you had a few of those other guys sort of just would have a really good race at some point through the year that was sort of showing promise. And then as the time went on, they sort of would step up. But, you know, we had guys like Robbo and that, who was from that Northern Beaches area. Guy Andrews was coming through. He had that ability to sort of do the longer races. And still now today, he's running around doing crazy stuff at his age. He shouldn't be doing that. Tell him, if you're talking to him ever again, don't. Just tell him, just take it easy.
But, I'll talk to him tomorrow, so I'll let him know that you said that.
he's got to relax a bit. But he was just one of those guys. He was very similar to you, very similar to Dean, that stature they've got, and that, you know, when you're racing those guys, you know that you're in for a bit of a battle, because they're not going to give you in, or they're not going to give you an inch. But that were the main group. Scotty Thompson was just amazing in those races too. He's obviously tied up with North Bondi, and you know, he could run across the sand like he was just running on a track. He was that fast, that sort of thing. And there's a few of the older guys, obviously mentioned Grant and a few of the others that used to be, Marky Bennett's used to do really well in those races back in the day. So they were a little bit older than me, and we were coming in through behind them. And we'd had a few guys come internationally. We had Oscar Chalofsky actually came out and did an Ironman race. He came out and did the second Bondi Ironman race. And it was when we sort of done pretty well at it. And I still remember, and a few of the guys will remember the story, and you know Oscar as well as I do. He doesn't hold back when he tells a story. He likes to make the point that he's pretty good at whatever he does. And he would tell stories that I've been training so hard. And my brother Herman, he's a freak on the board, and he was miles out in front, but I can beat him. You know, like, that's the thing. He'll pump someone up, and then he can beat that person or something. I remember him saying that about Dean. That little guy, he's got no hope. You know, he's going to be hopeless in this. He went, and Dean just kicked his butt. And then, to his credit, after it, Oscar did congratulate him and was blown away that they could do it. Obviously, Oscar's an awesome ski paddler, and that was his background, that he'd come over to Aussie and to do that Ironman race. But it was some pretty crazy times.
Yeah, Oscar's fantastic in telling stories. And he's a great guy. He respects you as well, but he loves telling a story and loves just sort of giving people shit and seeing how they react. And I remember he was telling me in one of these podcasts recently, we're talking about his rivalry with Grant Kenny. And I don't think Grant Kenny knew that he was having a rivalry with Oscar at the time. No. Oscar was seeing him like in through the apartheid years, winning like Molokai's and winning Ironman. He's like, hang on, like, I can beat this guy. Like, come on, like, let me race him. And eventually they got the race. But it's just fantastic to have those type of characters in the sport, and still in the sport now, like especially in ocean ski paddling, having turn up to events and tell stories. I love it. I love hearing all those different stories from all the different characters in the sport.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've had a great crossover, and, you know, obviously one of the guys when I was going around wasn't doing iron, but Dean Gardner, you know, when he was doing the Molokai skis back in those days, it was, and he was competing with Oscar, and, you know, there was always that, the Aussie crew really had a good base in everything. You know, we sort of, they crossed over from that ski paddling to kayaks and obviously ocean ski racing. So we sort of covered a whole different area of different sports.
Yeah, it's just awesome, I guess, because of our background as well, because we all grew up in that nippers or surf lifesaving background. We've got so many different skills around the ocean, which allows us to, like, I know I credit myself to surf lifesaving in a way from growing up for so many years doing that sport, to allow myself to be able to adapt to different sports at my age now, because I just had so many skills that I learned throughout the years that I guess I can use now and be able to jump on a SUP or a foil or whatever it might be and just be able to do it, you know, like it just happens.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't think I would have got that if I just did one sport growing up. But so everyone splits 89, 90, goes over to Uncle Toby's in NutriGram. But what was it like as an athlete to know that, like, you weren't necessarily racing the best field every weekend? Like, what were the guys who sort of stuck with NutriGain and what were the guys who went over to Toby's?
Yeah, that was a frustrating thing, you know. I know, and that was a thing. Each of the groups said that they've got the best going around, and you know, who was going to do that? And that was part of the reason that it had so much following. You know, there was always that rivalry there. And you know, there's no doubt in the world, the guys that competing in the Toby's were top of their game, and the guys in the NutriGrain were at the top of their game. And that's where I said to you before, the only time that they all really got back together was Aussies. And that was for quite a few years there, you know, in that early 90s period, where that was when it was all, you know, that rivalry going on. But then it was great to see it all sort of disperse and then all come back as one, and then have everyone back in together. And that was sort of the tail end of my career where it merged back together, and I was still fortunate enough to be still racing and competing when it all got back together again. And the format's changed, you know, to try and refresh the sport and like it is today, you know. There were so many different changes. We did a series where we were doing an event called Test of Toughest, where we went for 2 weeks and filmed purely for TV an event where we were mountain climbing, abseiling, whitewater kayaking, mountain biking, all that sort of stuff. And that was the series for the year. And then they tried to do like the surf leagues, where they're incorporating the Ironman within the events, where you had swimmers, board paddlers, ski paddlers, IRBs, surf boats, the whole lot, beach competitors. And, you know, it just sort of morphed and evolved over the years to different formats, to now where it is predominantly more an iron series that got going.
Yeah, it's interesting looking at the different formats as well. Like, it seemed like the Toby's went more longer distance style racing, whereas did the NutriGrain do exactly the same thing? Were they doing the longer events, or were they doing more like eliminators and M-shapes and triple sprints and that type of formats?
Yeah, the Toby's guys did really well with sort of inventing those different events, whereas we just did the traditional ones that we were doing when we're all together as one in the long distance Ironman racing, where it was just a set, you know, you'd be breaking it up with a swim, board and a ski of certain distances, and then it'd be the one race. Whereas the Toby sort of did reinvent it a little bit and try to do the sprints and the eliminators and different things. And there are some of the little ideas that have obviously come off the back of that have been run today. And, you know, Mick Porro was a huge part of that back in the early breakaway. And then now he's still involved in some form now with that, the INX. And, you know, it's just crazy how the wheel turns, and then it all sort of comes back together, and same faces, different people, different ideas. And you know, and I think I'm pretty privileged to be able to be involved in that right at the very initial start of it all, and then now today, not competing, but obviously on the coaching side of things, and my daughter Jordan racing in there as well.
Yeah, it's cool how that I guess everything comes back as well. Because what was Mick Porro's role when the initial breakaway happened? Like, who initiated the breakaway?
Without going into too much detail, I think I'm pretty sure, you know, I probably missed a few, but Trevor was, you know, with that group there, but Mick Porro and GK were the two main guys that said, you know, we can do this better, and you know, we've got these different ideas, let's go and do our own thing. And they got the sponsor, and away they went. So that was probably the two driving forces behind it. And then obviously went from there.
So how much older is GK than you? Like, just to give me an idea of the...
There'd be about 5 years, I guess, five or 6 years. And Rido, Craig Winnington's about that same age. Dwayne Thiers, you know, all that crew are about that age above me. And then there was Trevor and myself coming through in that next group, and then down below that.
And then what was the gap to, was Guy Andrews the same sort of similar age, and then someone like Dean? Like, what was the difference there?
2 years between Dean and I, so we're pretty close. And then Guy's just a little bit younger than him as he was coming through. And then, you know, had the guys like Stephen Pullen, who won an Aussie title with a run up the beach with Dean. No, so Dean had some pretty close finishes in his iron finals, and he fought pretty hard for all of them, as you know. And it was, there was sort of that spread of about 10 years, probably, you know, 10 or 15 years between that top end of the, you know, your Kennys and your Riddingtons and your Leeches and all that sort of crew, right down through to Guy Andrews. And then you had the guys like Kai Hurst coming through, Zane Holmes and Shannon and all that crowd.
And who was somebody that you idolized as a kid? Like, who were you looking up to? Or was there that type of era before you that you were really looking up to and aspiring to be like somebody? Or was it you sort of creating your own path, as you were talking about before?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we were creating our own path there. But me coming from New South Wales, I always sort of looked up to Robert Chapman was a big hero of mine. Steve Warren, who was a board paddler, but back in those days, for me, that was, you know, they were the guys that I sort of looked up to in the surf that when I was coming through. And then there was all the legendary stories about the older guys, but you know, then you would sort of get to see or meet those people later on down the track as you started to sort of travel a bit more and do more competitions around different interstate events.
So was Ironman always the pinnacle of the sport, or did it really only become more so the pinnacle in the late 80s, early 90s? Or was it always, like, if you went to Aussies when you were a cadet, was the Ironman the one that everybody wanted to win? Or was it still, was the ski race as important, or the boat race, or the IRB? Like, what was the feeling back then when you went to Aussies? Because I know now it's like Ironman's the last event. You had the Taplin, which is a big event, the board relay, the ski relay. I guess they were the ones that probably stood out for me. But what were the events that you really wanted to win when you were coming through?
For me, obviously, back in those days, the big ones were the surf races and the surf belts. They were huge. You know, they were, you know, if you made the belt race final, you know, you were seen to be, you know, a strong swimmer, tough competitor. You know, you got to drag that belt out in the surf and that sort of thing. But, you know, there wasn't such an Ironman emphasis. Everything had its place. And obviously the A-grade boat was a huge one to win. And we say that the open skis, the board races and the surf races, the individual races really held a lot of prestige, where I know they still do now. And I respect everyone that does an event, you know, like you, whether you're a beach sprinter or a surf swimmer or a ski or board paddler or an iron, you know, you're there competing, and you're competing against the best that's going around, and you're there to put the best effort in as possible. So everyone's equal in that fact. But I guess obviously now, through that period, as you say, through that late 80s and 90s, is where the Ironman probably did take more centre stage on that at that Australian titles. And you know, to his credit, I mean, you've got someone who's running around not just doing one or two legs. You've got to do three legs and a run in between each of those. And it probably does show the strength of an individual competitor. Always wanted to do well in a Taplin, but coming from Thrill, you know, we never had the numbers to put a team together. We were lucky enough to get the three. And as I said, when Dean and I and Brett Delker won the board relay, we could sort of get that happening, but we just couldn't get a six-man Taplin together in those days. But yeah, definitely. I know my dad, they all talk about surf belt racing. That was a big one back in the 60s and 70s. But Ironman was obviously still happening then too. But nowadays, it's obviously the iron is the main focus.
Yeah, for sure. I really noticed that as I was going through. And I guess it was the Nutri-Grain series and the Uncle Toby's that really brought the prominence to Ironman racing. But yeah, I didn't think it was always the most prominent event. And I guess now, talking to yourself and your dad, yeah, you sort of hear that it wasn't always that way. But obviously it's become that way because of different movements and the way the sports change over time. How long were you at Thurl for? And when, I know you moved up to Noosa Heads towards the tail end of your career. What brought about that move?
The initial thought was, obviously, when we were competing and we were doing the Iron Series, a few of the guys did migrate north, and Leachy was one of those. Leachy, Barry Newman, Robbo, they all came up to Kurrawa on the Gold Coast and competed up there. They trained at Noosa with Alan Coates, who's passed away a few years ago, but he was a legend of that long distance Ironman racing, and he took Leachy under his wing and Baz and the boys, and they all went up there and just trained. And they were doing the same thing that we were doing down home in Wollongong as a group together up on the Sunshine Coast. And, you know, that sort of kickstarted all that group training and you know, that Ironman evolution up on that in Queensland. But I sort of was tempted to go, but I was just comfortable in what we had down home, and we were doing the same thing as they were doing, probably doing a bit tougher because it was colder. You know, you'd see a picture here and there, not like today. I mean, if someone's doing a session anywhere in the world, you can see it instantly. Whereas you'd only hear things, or you'd say, you know, someone say, the boys up on the Queensland at Noosa are doing this, this and that. They're swimming across the river. They're going out around the points at Noosa, and we'd be going, well, you know, you just didn't see it. But we knew what we're doing was the right thing, and we always were pretty tight knit with what we were doing. You know, we didn't let on too much with what the training we were doing. Then you try to keep it a secret, and you know, you'd be doing things. Oh, you've got the upper hand on someone, and if you're doing this, or you might be doing an extra swim session, or an extra ski session, or a longer board session, whatever it might be, to keep in front of the other guys. So we stayed home, didn't come up into that Queensland where the warmer weather, a lot of the guys did. And whereas now it's just a natural progression. They just sort of, they get to under 17s. If not before that, they're gone. They're in Queensland and away they go. But we stayed down there the whole career. As I said, did Nippers all the way through with Thirroul, went to Ostie for 3 years and did my bronze at Ostenmere, and then came back to Thirroul and stayed there until we moved to Maroochydore Surf Club, joined Maroochy. Because we'd been coming back and forth to the big carnival they used to have at Maroochydore. It used to be the Sun 60, used to be the Just Jeans. It was a huge carnival that was sort of about the same time as the Freshwater Carnival. And we'd get looked after by Maroochydore. Mal Pratt, who's a life member of Maroochydore Surf Club, he'd billet us out. So Dean and I stayed at his house, and we'd get the use of his car, and he lived on the river. We had a tinny, so it was just like the red carpet was rolled out. And so we joined Maroochydore, and then I was there for 12 months, and then we went to Mooloolaba, and I sort of stayed there until I moved to Noosa. And I was doing some coaching with the Nippers at Mooloolaba, and helping Kingy out with the under 15s, and then that position came at Noosa, and been there ever since. So that's sort of that progression in a bit of a nutshell of how it all worked. But yeah, I'm glad I am where I am now. It's great.
Yeah, it's a definitive progression, I guess. Now there's very few athletes who don't move up to the Gold Coast. Like I know at 18, I went straight up to Northcliffe, and I was sort of trying to weigh up my options, which club I went up to, because that's just where you went to. That was kind of like the bubble you wanted to get into. You wanted to be able to train. You hear some almost like urban legends in a way, like the way people are training. Like we do have like Strava now. It's like you finish a session, it's already uploaded and everyone can see it straight away.
You've got to switch it off. You just got to switch it off so no one can see what you're doing. But I know it was very tempting. Don't get me wrong, because you know some of those winters that we had down south, and when I say down south, it wasn't like you get down in Victoria and Tassie, but definitely it was cold and it was a lot harder than what it is up here in Queensland. But I think that made us a bit tougher as well, and it sort of hardened us up a little bit. And we had that base there. If we come to Queensland, Mum and Dad couldn't have come with us. You know, we wouldn't have had that support base. We would have been on our own. And there were a lot of the things that we weighed up when we thought about it, but I probably competed for about 4 years up here for Mooloolaba or Maroochydore and Mooloolaba, and then that was pretty much it. I'd had enough, hung up the togs, and then progressed into that coaching role.
So when did you stop racing, and what was it like coming from a professional Ironman? Like you win 7 series titles, you win 2 Ironman Australian Championship crowns. We haven't even spoken about the Coolangatta Gold yet, but we'll come back to that. But what was it like going from this, I don't know, 15-year professional career almost, to stopping?
Yeah, I was pretty tough. But I knew at that stage, you know, I had lucky enough, you know, I met my wife Tiana when I was sort of still young down in Wollongong, and we'd sort of only been going out for a little while, and then we had Jordan, and that was sort of the start of that family life. And so coming up into Queensland, the kids were still young, and we had that opportunity to come up, and I was obviously still racing. So that was the reason we made that shift at that point in time, because I'd been living out of home and were sort of a bit self-sufficient at that stage too, to be able to come up. And that was the catalyst behind coming up and starting up here in Queensland with the young family. And then we had Madison 3 years later. So we had the two girls and Tiana and myself, and then we headed up. And that 2000 was when we moved to the Sunshine Coast.
Yeah, it must have been obviously a whole different change, and I guess you're moving into that next page of life. But we were speaking about Michael King before and helping him out at Mooloolaba, but I know you guys had a couple of battles in the early 90s at the Coolangatta Gold. So they brought the Coolangatta Gold back after a few years off, and they had the Manly Gold and that type of thing. But I know Kingy got you in that first year, and then you came back the next year and beat him. What was it like racing in the Coolangatta Gold at that time, and what was it like compared to today?
Well, I think when we came up to do that Coolangatta Gold that first year, and I mentioned before, we'd hardly ever been to the Gold Coast. It's not like today. The kids just know, they just get these opportunities that they don't appreciate until later on that they've been given. But we had no idea, or I had no idea what buildings were and where, what beaches were. I just knew that was Surfers Paradise and that was Coolangatta, and you had to get between the two down and back. So
yeah,
we were really green that first year. We had a limited little crew. We just had my dad and my uncle handling and a couple other friends. And pretty much, you don't get any support. We had the drinks and that set up for the ski paddle. We went from Surfers Paradise down to Coolangatta. You did the swim over to Balinga. Then you ran over to Currumbin, paddled around to Burley. And then from Burley, you ran up to Surfers Paradise. That was the end of the race. So I distinctly remember the last time I saw any of my support crew in that last run was at Burley. Put my shoes on and away I went. I didn't see anyone until I got to Surfers Paradise Surf Club. And Kingy had guys coming out of each access way. It's exactly the same as what they've got happening now. You know, he knew where the different landmarks were, or the different points along that stretch of beach, because to me it was just like one open stretch of beach and nothing else. And yeah, they just had that. They just had it all dialed in, and they were ready to go. Kingy won it. I was second, and Dean was third. But I just there and then I thought I'm going to come back and do this again. But way back to that first race in Bondi, it's that same experience. I know what I've got to do now to win that race next time I do it. So we did all that, and when we went up the second time, we were almost probably flew a plane up from Sydney to the Gold Coast with our support crew, and it just worked like clockwork. And I got Kingy in the end, and it was just a really good feeling and good to race again and sort of know that I could do it. I just had to get it right.
But why did they only bring it back for? It was only brought back for 2 years. Is that right?
Yeah, they brought it back for 2 years, and then and in that time, obviously, I said in the late 80s, we were doing the Manly Gold, then they did the Coolangatta Gold, and then they did they called it the Gold Coast Gold, which the Toby's guys did, and then it sort of disappeared for another couple of years, and then it's now come back as the Coolangatta Gold that it has for, probably the last 6 years or so that they've been running it.
Yeah, I think they've been almost running it since Kane won it again. I think it was in 2005.
Yeah, probably so
it was
more. Yeah,
15 years now. It doesn't seem that long, but you've got like Kane has won five, and then Ali's won six, and then you've got like Reece Jury in there, and Josh Minogue and a few others. So it's been,
they're all Thrill. They're all from Thrill. That's the weird thing about the Gold too. Some of the guys that have won it, like you mentioned, I've won it. Reece has won it. Josh has won it. You've got Ali down there who's won it. It's just a crazy little crew. Jonathan Crowe's won the Gold Coast Gold from Wollongong. So there was it was just like a little melting pot down there in that era that we were in down in Wollongong. It was great.
Just all a bunch of hard men who just trained lots and trained long and got really good at those distance events. So you have another four. So we go back to 90. You win seven series in a row. What was the vibe like then for athletes, like how much money were you making, but like what was like an event win, like was it like $5,000? Was it $10,000? And then was like, there was a series win. Was there endorsements you were getting on the back of that? Were you, was there TV deals and that sort of thing? Like, I know like the Toby's guys, like Leachy said, it was like, he was kind of like famous in a way from the Super Series where he couldn't, he had to move house, he reckons, at one point. And there was just like, it was quite a different, it was quite a different scene to what they have now. Like, you're kind of like a celebrity. Was it the same in the Nutri-Grain series?
Yeah, look, it was pretty cool. You know, you'd be recognized if you went somewhere and someone had sort of spot you, they knew who you were, which is pretty crazy considering we were just Ironmen going around doing Ironman races. But yeah, it was pretty good. And you look back at now, you don't realize how lucky you were. But we were racing back in those days for probably more than some of the guys are now. Like, you were right, like $10,000 for win some of those events. And then on top of that, they'd have a prize pool for the final points tally. So there was great money in it coming through in that time. And then obviously the golds back when Leachy won, it was like $20,000 gold bullion when he won the gold back in the 80s. So in comparison today, it should be a fair bit more than what they're racing for.
Yeah, especially with CPI increase, they're not even getting that at the moment, which is crazy. But it was a different era. There wasn't the competition between the different sports. There wasn't the Olympics didn't come around. There wasn't all that corporate money going elsewhere. What happened? Do you think? Like, I know that in about 66, I mean 66, yeah, 66, 96, the Toby's and the Nutri-Grain kind of merged towards the end of the 90s.
What was that all about?
How did that come about?
Well, I think it had just sort of run its race, and you know, it had sort of exhausted all options of different events and ways of sort of reinventing the sport. And I think it was then that time just to come back in and then come back as one and reunite it with Surf Life Saving, and Nutri-Grain was still there obviously, and then continue on. And that was pretty much how it all worked out, you know. You know, I think it was for the better that it all came back together and gave everyone opportunities. But unfortunately, in that time period, some of the guys had seen their time and hadn't sort of carried through into that time when it all merged back together again.
Yeah, so just to give me an idea, so when it merged, was it the Uncle Toby's or was it the Nutri-Grain? Because a lot of guys were still running around in Uncle Toby's Rashies till like 2000. I remember going to the last ever series race, or one of the last ever series races at Manly. Must have been 2000-2001 season. Was it Nutri-Grain or Uncle Toby's?
No, it would have been Nutri-Grain then. Toby's and Nutri-Grain sort of did that competition run between the right at the beginning of the 90s through the mid 90s, and then it all came back as one.
Okay, so I must have been, I don't know where I've got these Uncle Toby's rashes from, but maybe I was younger than I thought.
Maybe someone was just wearing them around.
No. I remember like distinctly. Racing? I was at the Manly. I can't remember which hotel it was. And I was sitting in the lobby, and I was getting Guy Andrews signature. Kai Hurst must have been young at the time. Carla Gilbert. I had everybody's signature all over the rush shirt.
Yeah. Maybe that might have been right at the very tail end of it, but.
Yeah. Look, I don't know. I'm asking you because you were there.
Yeah. As I said to you, I've got to go in that filing cabinet, man. It's difficult to try and pull everything up. But, yeah, towards the end of the 90s, definitely it all started to sort of merge back as that one.
Yeah, and there was just, like, obviously a merging of the two different scenes. But were, like, when did Trevor continue when it got to that point? Was Guy Andrews and those guys as well going through? Like, were you and Dean still racing when it all merged back together? And what was it all as one again?
Yeah, no, we're all sort of... That's why I said a lot of them were still racing, and then some had sort of finished their careers and weren't racing anymore. But Dean and I were, and that's when Guy came through. Kai Hurst sort of was in that tail end of that Toby's and into the Nutri-Grain. So Zane and Shannon, all that sort of younger crew that were starting to knock us off and do well in their races were coming through at that point.
At what point did you actually stop the professional Ironman racing? Like, how old were you?
I'm pretty sure it was, I think it was 2002 I finished up. And I finished up racing like at that level, at the elite level.
And then did you go into Masters and do different events that way? Or was it?
Yeah, when it,
you I stopped, went into Masters. You couldn't help yourself.
I went into Masters thinking I was going to rule the world, and I just got detonated by Paul Lamont. So that would broke my heart, and I sort of stayed away from it for a little while, and then came back.
Yeah, you just didn't really have probably the fire or the training ethic when you got into Masters that you probably had when you were doing the series.
No, exactly. And the thing is, I think it's sort of that I still enjoy it and still love it. But when you go in a race, everyone's expecting you to, you're going to win it. He's going to win it. He's going to be, he's got the iron. Oh, he's going to win it. And it's not like that. You know, you got to work hard for it. And then I just sort of was at that stage started to do a bit of that coaching. And I was really enjoying that because I felt I was getting more sort of gratification out of teaching the young kids how to sort of get that surf skill that I got taught so many years ago, and then watching them perform and race.
Yeah, it's a different feeling coaching somebody because you're able to get some of your competitive juices, I guess, out through your athletes, and you're sort of seeing them improve and seeing them get better. You kind of allows you to step back a little bit and be able to like just give your knowledge to those kids that probably you have given over so many different coaches over your period of time and the things that you've learned. Is that something that you're really enjoying about coaching now, like with Noosa and seeing the different athletes come through and trying to see them help them forge their journey into that, I don't know, just that goal that they want to achieve?
Yeah, definitely. I think you get more satisfaction out of that, like actually seeing them. And, you know, you'll see it and you'll see it in the kids' eyes when they, if they have a race where they have a breakthrough and they've actually, you know, some of the little things you've been trying to teach them and show them, you know, over that season or through the preseason, and then towards the end of the year, they'll have a race where everything just sort of clicks and comes together and you know, their eyes, they're just beaming that they've, you know, they believe in themselves or they've got that satisfaction. But you see it all the way through, not just the kids, you know, the parents are a huge part of that as well. And you see that they get a bit of satisfaction out of it too, that, you know, that all their driving around in the cars and getting from A to B and getting into training all the time has paid off for them as well. So it's just you know, everyone sort of gets that fuzzy feeling, you know, when things go right. But obviously there's times when it's, you know, you're kicking your toes and you just want to, you just want to give up and you don't want to do it anymore. But they're the times, you know, you just got to try and forge on and keep pushing on.
And how long have you been coaching for now since you finished up racing and you moved into that role? Like, and how have you seen it evolve over time? Like, obviously you talk about training before and you were just going out there and flogging yourself and going forever. And now you've got probably a bit more science behind the way you coach and the way you help other athletes. Like someone like Geordie, you've been coaching her for a long time now. She's had so many successes. How have you seen like coaching change for you and how has that ride been?
Yeah, it's obviously changed a lot. And then, you know, over the years, there has been more science put into it. So it's not just a trial and error. It's actually proven facts that, you know, if you do certain things, you know, if you have a rest period or you have a building phase and you've got, you're using power and speed and different things like that, that, you know, you target your race. And by the time you get to that race, you're all ready to go and all primed and in the best condition you possibly can be. So I was probably with the younger crew down there at Moolbar for about 4 years. And as an age manager in the Nippers too, I swore I'd never do that, walk around with a clipboard and everything else, but I did and was coaching as well. And Geordie was a part of that group. And we had some great young ones. And like Matty Dunn was one of the ones that running around when I was sort of there with Geordie and their great mates. And then been at Noosa now for nearly 10 years. So it's been awesome. Been really good. And, you know, we've had some great champions there over the time, and it's hard to sort of try and keep all the crew there at one point. But, you know, I've enjoyed it and I get that satisfaction of, you know, passing on some of that knowledge that I've learned over the years. I know that some of the kids have no clue what I've achieved, but, you know, that's by the by. I'm now Geordie's dad or their coach. It's not Darren, who it used to be. And I'm fine with that, you know, and I think that's great that they don't have that. They don't sort of see it in that way that, you know, he's done it before. You know, they know that I've probably done a little bit before, but they don't completely understand it. It's their parents probably do, but not the kids. And, I do enjoy it. You know, there's times when they're obviously some of them think they know more than you do, and that's just going to go no matter what you do. There's, you know, kids always think that they know better. But they learn pretty quick that if, you know, they keep doing what they've been doing, you've been telling them not to do, it'll all sort of unravel and unfold. So if you can try and keep them contained and focused on what they want to try and do, and you're always going to see those little gems in there that you know that, you know, they may not be at the top of their game right now, but if they keep working hard and they've got that work ethic, that they'll get there at some point. And, you know, sometimes it's sooner than they expected, and that's always satisfying too.
Yeah, it is interesting hearing you talk about people not knowing who you are. And I guess even for me, you were Geordie's dad. And I heard the name, and I probably knew Dean's results, I guess, a little bit more than you, because I trained with him and actually been able to race and compete with Dean. It was quite an experience, because I sort of admired him as a youngster because of his stature and because of his never give up attitude. And he always epitomized that it's not the dog in the fight, it's the fight in the dog. And that was the thing that Dad always used to say to me. And it was just always, really, really cool to. So now especially see more into the past and the history and starting this podcast. And actually I talked to Guy, and I talked to Dean Gardner, and I talked to Oscar, and I'm talking to you. And there's just like all this history from that period that you probably don't know. Like, and I wouldn't know, because I was kind of the kid who came through and was just like only worried about himself and just was trying to work on me. Like, I didn't give a shit about anybody else. But now you're a bit green, as you talk about, and you go up to Queensland and you're competing and racing, but you didn't really look, I didn't really look at history books. I didn't look at names. I didn't really care. I was sort of like, it was all about me. But as you're getting older, you're sort of going, okay, so I wonder how this happened. And what happened here? And you're sort of just starting to ask more and more questions. And this is what I'm getting out of this. It's really, really nice to hear all the different stories.
Yeah. I mean, I think your dad's come out of the same era as me, because I heard that over and over in the car coming back from a carnival. And it was always that, you know, it's not the dog in the fight, it's a fight in the dog. And that was certainly true for Dean. But yeah, you know, there's a lot of those guys that you mentioned there before that we've all had an association with at some point through that era. And it's great to see them still around, you know, like, you know, Dean Gardner, you mentioned there as well, still now with Oceans Keep Paddling, is probably one of the, you know, most important guys running around and knowledgeable. And, you know, you've got guys like Oscar, who you've competed against, I've competed against, and all the way through, there's so many different crew that have crossed over and crossed paths at some point.
Yeah, it's awesome, and it is cool to be able to respect the results that these guys have had, because they aren't readily available, and it's nice to actually hear them talk about themselves, because I think it's something in Australian where either we got the tall poppy syndrome, or people don't like talking about them because there's the humility factor that all the Australians sort of tend to have, and it's hard to get results out of people. But once you get to start talking to them and start hearing about it, it's actually really, really cool to hear that history and have that spoken about. But when you're when you're coaching, obviously, like, how has it been coaching Jordan, seeing her progress over her career? Because she's done some amazing stuff now, like winning 5 Molokai to Oahu titles. She's won the NutriGrain series. And you're actually talking about that you hated swimming as a kid and you were only a board paddler. And she was talking about she did beach events and then all of a sudden started to get on the board and then never wanted to swim, and then sort of spent 5 years swim training trying to get competitive in the water. How was that process? Because was she kind of like one of those kids who sort of thought she knew everything, or was she always willing to learn as well and sort of like gradually probably learned how good you were as an athlete as well? Because she would have seen you as a young kid, but maybe didn't really understand the things that you were actually achieving and that you had achieved.
Yeah, I mean, Geordie was very determined, and she got dragged around every beach around Australia at that point too, because we were traveling a bit more at that point. From a young age, I still remember when I won that race at Bondi and the big surf. I've got a photo of her, in my arms. She was probably only about 3 months old when I won that race down in Bondi. And then I've got another photo where we're in Waikiki at the Ocean Man Series, and I won the Ocean Man Series round at Waikiki Beach. And there's a photo of Geordie as a baby just in my arms. So yeah, she's definitely been. Many, many places that a lot of kids wouldn't have at that point. But, you know, when she started her career, she was great at, she was a beachy, you know, she was good at beach flags, beach sprint. She did gymnastics right up until she was about 12 or 13 at a really high level, competitive level. And she actually got drafted to come down to the Institute of Sport about 12 months after we moved from Wollongong to Queensland. And to train down there full time, and we sort of waited up and we thought, we've just virtually moved from there. We don't really want to go back. And she was loving the Surf Life Saving and that as well. But and that crossed over. That was a really good base for her. And funnily enough, her mum, Tiana, was her gymnastics coach. So the poor guy's just been hammered at home and at training by both her parents as coaches. And but I think that gave her a really, really good base for where she is now in all the different sports. And, you know, obviously you mentioned before, she's won 6 board paddle titles. She won the ski last year and got a third the year before. So she's definitely achieved a lot in her career. And she won an Iron Series, Michigan Iron Series. She's won Aussie board titles. And, but yeah, look, everything right the way through from nippers. There's photos of her on the line, and it's not, they've got kids there, like, you know, scratching their hair, scratching their bum. And, you know, Jordan's just like got the full focus on the line. And that's just something that she's had forever. And whatever she does, she just puts 100% effort into it. And you know, nothing will ever change with her with that. But it was pretty hard to try and tell her that she needed to swim when she knew that Dad didn't really like swimming, and she'd always throw that one back at me. But look, it, don't get me wrong, it's tough at times to try and have that parent balance as well as coach balance. And I've been really lucky that if things get a bit tough at home between the two of us, then Tiana can step in. We've got like Maddie, our other daughter, who's a nurse now. She can sort of break the ice. If things get a bit tense at home, and when we're all living at home, as Jordan's moved out now with fiance Tim, but Maddie used to be able to sort of break the ice, and then we could carry on with another conversation, and it'd sort of go from there. But yeah, look, it's been a fun time, and it's been really good to watch her evolve and become her own person. Because obviously, right at the very beginning, it was always going to be, it's Jordan, you know, it's Darren's daughter, Jordan. She's going to do well. You know, it's not necessarily how it works. You know, she's had to work hard for what she's achieved, and credit to her that she's actually done that. You know, it's been really good, and you've traveled with her, and you've competed sort of at different events with her, and you've seen her in her element. And you know, she's good fun. She's pretty funny. She's got a good sense of humor, and doing really well.
Yeah, it must have been a really special experience recently, seeing Geordie sort of have her own amazing career and share that 40 years of Nutrigrain with that promotion and all the different things you were doing with Geordie and TJ getting on the box and sort of having the iconic fathers figures in their lives, and it's sort of become full circle now. What was it like to share that experience with Geordie?
Yeah, it was really special, and you know, she's thoroughly deserved that because she has worked hard and you know, she's sort of forged her own career in these last few years and become her own person. And it was also pretty special that Trevor and I got to share that opportunity with our kids, you know, with TJ, you know, and Geordie. I know that sometimes through the series there where Geordie was really sort of struggling a little bit and competing tough, competitions coming up, Trevor would always sort of be there to have a little word in her ear or talk to her, and likewise, you know, I could speak to TJ and that sort of thing. So that was a really special moment to share that with Geordie. And you know, like, she's had a tough couple of years injury wise. I mean, not many athletes will have an injury in their career and hopefully get through without any injury. Whereas Geordie had that stress fracture of the navicular where she had to have surgery, and she's got a screw in her foot now, and then to work really hard to rehab and get back to that level where she was actually competing, you know, competitively in that top 2-3, to then get another injury on her other foot where that required surgery as well. And that's been a big thing for her to overcome, and mentally for her to overcome. And I know that she's done an amazing job in doing that. And, you know, that's full credit to her. But to see her now sort of getting that recognition and those unstoppable stories, and it's a perfect unstoppable story for her that, you know, she's come from ocean racing and Iron Series wins and boards and ski titles that she's competed at Aussies and different things to now sort of getting back to nearly that 100% fitness again. And that road to that point is pretty tough to get to there, but she's done really well.
Yeah, it's been incredible to watch, and even talking to her recently on the podcast, just hearing her stories, and I know her well as well, but hearing her getting through all those injuries, like that is just really hard. And that's a lot of mental toughness to be able to do that and then come back and then get another injury and then come back again. I haven't had massive injuries, I guess, like that recently, but earlier in my career, I guess the stress fracture in my leg was a big one, and that actually allowed me to do surf ski, which I didn't really realize at the time. I thought the world was ending and the world just started. So it's amazing how those injuries can sort of make you learn to appreciate things, but also work harder to achieve those goals going forward. But talking about right now, Surf Life Saving, Aussie's cancelled, no training, group training as a coach. Like, how have you been able to deal with this whole COVID situation, and how you're working through it to sort of come out the other side stronger with all your athletes?
Yeah, look, I think the situation that the world's in at the moment's pretty uncharted waters for everyone. But, you know, for everyone to have competed all the way through the season and then come towards the end where they're all primed and ready to go and looking forward to the Aussies, and then for that to sort of be ripped out from underneath them through no fault of anyone, just the way it was, it's pretty hard. And I know my athletes at Noosa were scratching their head saying, well, what are we going to do? You know, you've trained so hard all through the season, and now there's nothing to do. There's no competitions to compete in. And I know a lot of them kept training, probably not at that high level or that intensity, but it was just that natural instinct that, oh, I've got to go for a paddle, or I've got to go swimming, or I've got to go for a run. So a lot of them were sort of able to do that in some form. And then now, obviously, Aussies would have been done and dusted and out of the way. So I think now it's a good time, and a lot of them are my athletes, especially. I've been trying to tell them just to have a bit of a rest now, because hopefully, you know, in the next month or so, that we're going to see the light at the end of the tunnel and we can get through all this and start to do some form of training, maybe not as we used to, as big groups, but definitely something that we can get groups back together and compete at some point down the track. You know, I'm hoping that each month as it goes on, it's going to get better and better in the way that we'll be able to do stuff. Obviously, the NRL's getting their competition back up and running. So I think that's going to be a really good sort of gauge as to what can be run after that. It was interesting to see a lot of people using video and different forms, Zoom for training or just for coaching purposes. And I think that's probably something that we'll be able to use now in the future. And then, and as you say, that's another point that's evolved from where we were just slogging away, working hard and doing stuff willy-nilly and trying to sort of do the hardest session you possibly could do and then back it up the next day, where there's more science now that you know, there's probably a use for videoing and performing training or setting training sessions for groups to do separately on their own by doing that. But I think hopefully at the end of the day, it'll all sort of work itself out and we'll be back as a normal group and be able to do that group training pretty much soon, you know, June, if not June, definitely July, that we can get back into it.
Yeah, it's a very challenging situation for everybody. I'm sure there'll be some virtual surf life-saving races coming up as well, because that seems to be what everyone's doing in the SUP world. I think there's like 15 different SUP virtual races that I've got in my inbox that people are asking me to do, and I haven't got that excited over those yet, but we'll see that could become the norm for a little bit, who knows. But it's definitely a time of period, I guess, that we've probably never experienced in our lifetime, at least in my lifetime, and it gives us a little bit of a time to step back and see what other things we can work on and things that we can make more efficient and better going forward into the future. But is there anything you wanted to add before we jumped off air? Is there any shout outs you wanted to give or anything like that?
Oh, there'd be plenty of shout outs, I guess, but you know, if I start doing that, you're going to miss someone and then you'd be in all sorts. But, you know, obviously I've mentioned it before, you know, my mum and dad were a huge part of my career. Tiana, my wife, she's been fantastic. And obviously Geordie and Maddie, they've supported me in my endeavours as a coach. And you know, like looking back in those early days, Dean was a huge training partner force for me, where I don't think if he hadn't been around or hadn't had the drive that he had, I probably wouldn't have gone to training. You know, he used to come pick me up to go swimming training some mornings from my house, and he'd bang on the downpipe. I'd just look out the window and say, I'm not going this morning. You know, he'd just be go, go, go. So he was a huge part and a huge influence and a huge help to me. But you know, there's so many different people, as I've mentioned before, lucky enough to have some great coaches and mentors over the years that, you know, it may not have been a lot of input, but it's just little key things that have happened that they may have said or they may have done or that I've watched that you know, that you keep with you forever and you can then use maybe with your athletes or something like that. But, you know, it's just we had a really good family base and that was one of the advantages I think we had. And I'm now lucky enough to have like the setup I've got now with Tiana and the two girls, and Jordan's moved out and she's engaged and sort of going into another phase, another era.
Yeah, it's all about those support structures and those great people around you that really you sort of see. And all the different champions, they always have like a really good team around them that allow them to get to the point that they're at. And you had so many people there, like your family and you, I guess Jordan and the kids, and then obviously Dean and your brother and all those different people in your life really helped you go to that next level. But mate, I really appreciate your time today. It's been awesome to talk about the glory days of, I guess, surf lifesaving with you and so many different things to learn, I'm sure, for the guests out there.
No, pleasure. It's been really good. I've enjoyed it, actually. You're sort of a bit hesitant at first, but, you know, hopefully you've got a bit of info there that you needed to get. But definitely, you know, it's been a great journey for me and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And, you know, hopefully you can hang around for a few more years yet to see what pans out.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's so much more to go in your career as a coach and as a family man. There's so much more to do. And it was awesome to hear all the history of the sport. And I'm sure there's so many lessons out there for the listeners to learn from. So if anybody wants to watch this back, you can go on to Facebook, Boothcast on Michael Booth Facebook page. If you want to listen to any of these, Apple Podcasts or Spotify, it's all there. And there's so many great lessons from so many great athletes and business leaders. So if you want to check it out, subscribe, like, share, all that good stuff. And Darren, thank you again so much. And I'm sure we'll talk soon.
Will do. Pleasure, mate. Thanks.
Cheers.